This is the Countdown to Mickey podcast, where we take a new look and deep dive into the things we love at Walt Disney World and Disneyland. This is Michelle.
And this is Steve.
And this is the Countdown to Mickey podcast. Because of the pandemic, we've decided to postpone our next Disney trip for a year. We are typically annual pass holders and go quite a few times a year, so this was a huge change for us.
To help us get over our Disney depression, we decided to do a countdown of our favorite rides and really dive deep into our favorite attractions.
Welcome back to episode 9, number 42 on our countdown, which is...
the Matterhorn.
Oh, yeah. At Disneyland, of course. The Matterhorn is only at Disneyland.
Correct. Disneyland is the only park with the Matterhorn bobsled ride out of any Disneyland park in the world.
Yes. Disney says you hurtle through the snow-capped mountains on a speeding alpine sled while avoiding the clutches of the abdominal snowman.
Abominable.
Oh. Why do I always say that? You have to be 42 inches or taller, and it's made to look like its counterpart in the Swiss Alps. So, how did this come to be? Couple of things. So, during construction from Sleeping Beauty Castle, there was a huge pile of dirt, which they called Holiday Hill. But then they decided to call it Snow Hill because Walt was in love with the real Matterhorn while filming a 1959 movie, The Third Man on the Mountain.
And have you ever seen that movie?
No. Did you watch that movie?
I did. I didn't watch
in
the whole...
in its entirety?
So I didn't watch the whole thing, but I got to watch a few clips on YouTube. And like, I would have never thought that it was a Disney movie. It's... like a story of a older man taking a boy up the mountain, and this boy's dad died on the mountain. So I guess his dad died when trying to climb the Matterhorn.
Mm-hmm.
And a girl goes along with him. And I didn't get the details of who that girl was, but the climbing scenes in it are much different than the climbing scenes that we normally see in today's standard movies. And so I have just recently watched the movie Free Solo, where Alex Honnold climbs El Capitan, a 900-meter face, and he does it without any ropes.
Oh, no.
And it's one of the coolest, like, documentaries that you'll see, and it actually has shots of on the face. There's people hanging on the face, like, watching him climb throughout the 900-foot climb. That is definitely not what Third Man on the Mountain is. And the Third Man on the Mountain, it does have some climbing scenes, but it is more of like a 10-foot climb that has a background shot of the mountains. And so it's just a lot different. The clips that I saw, I didn't get to see the whole thing, but again, it just reminded me how different movie making was back in 1959.
Oh, yeah. So, of course, Disney fell in love with the real Matterhorn, and he decided to cover the Holiday Hill with snow and add a toboggan run and rename it Snow Hill. But he really dreamed of creating the Matterhorn roller coaster. He, of course, wanted real snow, which is part that I love about Disney, but that's not going to work in Southern California, so they agreed on fake snow. So they decided to make the Matterhorn, which was a revolutionary roller coaster and made to look like its counterpart in the Swiss Alps, thanks to force perspective.
So, first of all, I think we can't really talk about the mountain and this idea of force perspective without talking about the mountain itself a little bit. And so the Matterhorn is based upon a mountain in the Swiss Alps. That mountain is 14,700 feet tall in real life.
Yes, it's exactly 100 times shorter. The Matterhorn is 147 feet. The actual ride is only 80 feet, but the mountain is 147.
Correct. So the mountain is exactly 147 feet tall, which I think is, again, one of the cool details that the Imagineers were able to fit in. But this idea of forced perspective, this is more of an art design tool when you can actually make the lines appear that they're taller, longer, or farther away than they actually are. And so the Imagineers did something really cool with the Matterhorn, even though it's 147 feet tall. they designed it so that when you're looking at it from the ground, it actually looks taller than it is. And so that idea, the way that they use to do that, is called forced perspective. And again, it employs kind of an optical illusion so that, imagine like you're looking down a picture of art and it looks like the railway is getting farther and farther away, even though it's a two-dimensional art picture.
Right. And so as you go further up the mountain, they use like smaller and smaller trees. So the mountain looks like it's bigger than what it actually is. So Steve, I could explain why I think it was revolutionary, but do you want to go into a little bit of the mechanics and engineering for why Matterhorn was a revolutionary roller coaster?
Sure. Well, I'm curious why you think it's revolutionary. I'm wondering what you were able to unearth.
So at the time, they didn't have steel roller coasters. They had wooden roller coasters. But this ride needed to take lots of small turns. So the steel tubular design allowed it so it could be bent into much tighter turns compared to wooden coasters of the day.
So, yes, that definitely all made it revolutionary. But do you know why they had to have small turns?
Because they wanted it to go throughout the mountain, like a toboggan run. Oh, and because of the cart design?
So no, and there's a lot of other reasons why they had to design it that way. And so I think it'd be interesting to take a step back and look at the partnership that Disney had with Aero Development. And what blows me away as I was reading about the creation of the Matterhorn. So at this point, the Aero Development team had already helped with a couple of the rides.
Which we've talked about.
Right, which we've talked about. But as I was doing the research, I realized that Aero Development was not a roller coaster company.
No, this was their first roller coaster.
Yeah, so they were a machine shop in Orange County. And so they basically knew how to machine metals, knew how to work with it, but they didn't create like full-on rides at this point. And so like that just blows me away that Disney like continued to say, hey, can you build these bigger and bigger rides? And they did it. And so what's so interesting, like you said, it is a steel ride. So again, manipulating steel is much harder than manipulating wood. Obviously, it is going to be stronger. But I think what really sums up the innovation of this ride and the reason why they had to have some short turns all along the mountain comes from the Imagineer Bob Gurr, who kind of was one of the lead engineers in the designing of the Matterhorn. And I think he sums it up. This is from a book called Walt Disney's Disneyland by Chris Nichols. A very, very cool book. And in it, Gurr is quoted as saying, "Coaster dynamics, speed, up and down slopes, banking, bank change rates, variable guest weights, friction coefficient based on how long the car has been running, temperature of the day, all these had to be figured out first, so I would have a menu of design criteria for the track layout." And so, to me, it's just so cool that all of the physics aspects were calculated first. So before they even designed the turns, every turn that was going on the mountain, before they designed the shape of the mountain, he knew exactly the constraints that he had to fit in order to make this ride safe, in order to make it possible. And so those turns, every single turn, every single aspect of the Matterhorn was created basically to manage the physics. And so he had to make sure that basically going up to the top of the ride, and how high did you say the ride was?
It's 80 feet.
So 80 feet. And so you can actually calculate the potential energy that an average cart would have based on the cart weight and the average rider weight. And so that's why he had to figure out the variable of the rider weight, because not every rider is going to be the same weight. And so the potential energy at the top of the ride, which is going to determine the maximum speed of the bobsled, that would be within a variable range. And so he basically said, okay, I have to make it so that it gets up to a certain speed, but doesn't go too fast. And to do that, he would create those turns that would slow down some of that speed in the bobsled. It would take some of that energy out, because every time you bounce, every time you hit a turn, you're going to lose some potential energy.
Is that why it bounces so much?
So that's one of the reasons, is that, again, that You start with potential energy at the top, and then as you drop, gravity converts that potential energy into kinetic energy, which is your movement, your speed of the bobsled. And so, again, every time you bounce, it transfers that kinetic energy into friction or into that vibration of the steel. And so Bob Gurr and all the other Imagineers had every single calculation. They knew how much the bank had to be so the bobsled wouldn't fall off the track. He knew every last detail in order for it to be fast enough to be fun, but not to be dangerous. And to me, that one paragraph that Bob Gurr provides in this book just shows the magic of Imagineering, of the physics that is entailed, that you have to think about before you do the design, but then how they could transfer those physics requirements into this awesome, fun ride that was, like you said, first of a kind. And so they were able to actually take the understanding of science and physics and marry it with the reality of Aero Development's machine shop skills, as well as the experience that Disney puts into play. And so all of those combined to make, again, this absolutely amazing ride that was the first of its kind that showed what could be possible with roller coasters.
Do you think it's the only ride that uses the pools at the end to serve as a braking mechanism? I was trying to think if there's any other rides that use the water.
So the ride has obviously changed.
Yeah.
Originally, the water was the only braking mechanism. And so...
What? They didn't have brakes?
So imagine it's 1956 when they first started designing this. They ended up building it in 1959.
Right.
They didn't have electric components back then. They had no control mechanisms
for the ride.
And so what they had to do, they had to basically put certain cushions on the ride that might be able to slow it down as it hits the railings. And then the main brake system was actually just the pool of water at the end. So the bobsleds would come to the very end of the ride and you'd get this big splash. And that splash is basically what absorbed all of that kinetic energy of the bobsled, and it distributed it throughout the water, which slowed down the bobsled and allowed it to come to the stop at the end. And so I thought that was, again, one of the amazing Imagineering inventions that, again, they didn't know how to stop exactly with a steel ride back then, since it was the first one ever invented. And so they just threw a pool of water at the end to slow it down, which is awesome.
It's like an added fun little splash of water, not so much Splash Mountain, but a little bit.
Right. I mean, that makes one of the iconic aspects of the Matterhorn bobsleds.
The other iconic aspect is the Yeti, which they wanted to have when the ride opened in 1959, but they actually didn't add it till 1978. And that original Yeti 1.0, lasted until 2015. He didn't move, but they used like a strobe lighting effect to make him look scary. And you can now find him in Disney archives and can be seen at special Disney events and showings. In 2012, they had a major refurb where they rehabbed the track and they did new bobsled trains. There used to be the trains you could sit like two people squished together. And so there'd be a total of four, but they switched it to made individual seats. So now there's only three on each train, or a total of six.
Before we go on for that, I want to go back to some of the original designs before the upgrade. And you said 2011, you said they
2012
changed.
Was the major refurb.
So there used to be a myth that my brother probably told me just to scare me.
About
the Abominable Snowman in the Matterhorn. So back in the day when he used to ride it, it was kind of the old animatronic where it's...
Like, it didn't move until after 2015.
Oh, really? So maybe it didn't move at all. So just you were zooming
just
by
it. It was a strobe light.
So it looked like it was moving. So there was a myth, again, probably just told to scare me, that a boy once stood up on the Matterhorn and the Yeti chopped his head off.
Oh, gosh.
And I used to be so scared of that Yeti. And whenever we'd run
really?
By, because I heard a boy stood up and got his head chopped off.
So now you make sure you sit in your seat. Maybe it's a good thing your brother told you that tale.
And so I that was one of my favorite rides for many reasons, but I think it was that extra fear factor that the Yeti might get me as I rode by it.
Now it's legit scary. I mean, we rode it recently and he moves. It's like really incredibly lifelike animatronic. And you get a couple glimpses of these monsters. Like, we wish the Disney World Expedition Everest would move like Disneyland Yeti does. Most of the time, the Disney World one is broken and doesn't move. So, what do you think? Do you think it really fits in Fantasyland or Tomorrowland? What do you think?
So, I don't think it should be in Tomorrowland. I think it definitely isn't like a futuristic ride. I think it fits well with Fantasyland. I mean, maybe it's not like Alice in Wonderland or Dumbo.
Scary Fantasyland.
Or Dumbo type fantasy. But, I mean, I think it is a fantasy of being able to
climb Matterhorn.
Yeah, climb a mountain in the Swiss Alps and ride a bobsled down it. I mean, I think that's a cool fantasy that fits in. And so I think it's a good border Fantasyland ride.
I always kind of thought it was kind of weird just there in the middle. But, yeah, I'm glad you appreciate it. So did you realize that there's two different routes?
I knew that there was always two different routes. I never knew how different they were because I knew that they crisscrossed at certain points. And I knew, obviously, since there were two different routes, they had to be different in some capacity. But I always thought they would have mirrored each other in terms of
they don't.
The length and the experience. But yeah, tell me about it. Tell me what
so
you know about
it. So one is more towards the Fantasyland side. That one is more mellow and a little bit longer. It goes slower and there's a quote-unquote smoother ride. And the other one that goes to the left is on the Tomorrowland side. That is the more adventurous one. And there's a pretty good dip because it drops down underneath the other track. And you get to see the snow monster more. So I actually think the last few times I've been on the right. So I really want to go back and like make sure I get on the left somehow.
Well, I wonder, now that fast passes are available, does fast pass go to the right all the time and then the regular line always goes to the left?
You know what? I'm not sure. I'll have to look at that.
Because I agree. I think
I've been on the right a lot.
Yeah, since we've been doing fast passes, we've been on the right quite a bit. Originally, I think I read somewhere that cast members weren't allowed to talk about
right.
the differences between the ride because they didn't want one side of the line getting longer than the other. Now the lines are so controlled by fast passes and by the queuing that I feel like you don't really get to choose in the end. You just end up
just say, you're going in here.
Right.
So there used to be a skyway that connected Fantasyland to Tomorrowland, which is a gondola system that went through the air, and it went through two large pairs of holes on either side of the mountain. Did you ever get to ride that, Steve?
So, yes.
Seems crazy. We've rode the Skyway in Disney World, but it's completely enclosed. These are not enclosed at all, like a upside-down bucket that you're going in.
So I remember, I think I read somewhere that it was 1994 that they took out the Skyway. And I remember coming to Disneyland after it had been removed and being totally devastated.
Really?
I remember walking through the castle, and the first thing I said was, oh my gosh, where's the Skyway? Like, I remember like that being one of my favorite things. I like to ride the Matterhorn. I think it was one of my top rides as a kid. I think
so. How come it's number 42?
As I said, as a kid. Oh. And so you want to go on the most dangerous ride. So I think the fact that my brother told me the scary myth about the Abominable Snowman
makes you like it more, of course, male.
I think like my other favorite ride at the time was Thunder Mountain, was my number one favorite ride. I think that might have been the time when I was too little to go on Space Mountain. So I think it might have been this time frame where I could go on Thunder Mountain, I could go on Matterhorn, but I couldn't yet go on Space Mountain.
Mm.
And so I think that's why those were my two favorite rides at the time. And so I love to go, A, ride the Matterhorn, but B, I love to go on the Skyway and go through the Matterhorn. Like, that was always one of my favorite parts. And again, I remember, like, that was one of the few rides where, like, the whole family would go on it, my grandparents, my parents, and it was kind of mellow. But I also remember how cool it was that you were above the whole park. Like you said, it wasn't enclosed, so you could hang out. Your arms were hanging over the side. You can reach out. It almost felt like you were flying. And so I loved that's like small, mellow part of the ride. And it was Like, I don't know.
Do you remember what you saw inside the Matterhorn?
Yeah, I think you saw the bobsleds go by. I'm pretty sure you saw the Abominable Snowman. Again, I might be mistaken by that because it was so long ago. But I'm pretty sure you saw the Abominable Snowman. And you heard the screams. And so, like, it was always fun to, like, oh, man, that person got really scared of that Abominable Snowman or whatever it is. And so it was great. And back in the day, they used to have people climbing it. Like, I remember there was always, like, just crazy stuff happening. Someone would be climbing the mountain. Someone might be yodeling or something like that on the mountain.
There's yeah, they had, like, climbers. Stuff. There was Tinkerbell that would fly off the top sometimes.
So, yeah, I just remember that being, like, you felt like you're at the top of the park. And it was the tallest structure in Orange County for a while, too. And so you were right up there at the top of it, and you got to see the whole park. And so I remember being devastated when that was taken out when I was 10 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I can understand why they did it for safety reasons, but I could see that would be a cool thing to go through the ride. I always like to get a sneak peek inside rides. I love that.
Right. It was, you got to see it from a different perspective. Like, it almost felt like you were, again, getting a peek behind the scenes, or you're just seeing a bird's eye view of the ride you just went on. And so it was one of those cool perspectives. And so, yeah, I was very bummed when it stopped.
This is a very popular ride. The wait times are, even on level one for Disneyland, it still can be 50 minutes. So it kind of ranges from 50 to 110. So this is definitely one you want to go first thing in the morning, last thing at night, or I don't even remember riding this ride without a fast pass. Maybe we have, but not anytime recently. But why did you rank this lower than some of the other roller coasters?
I was just about to ask you the same thing. I can give you my perspective. I think now riding it, and maybe it's just because I'm older, but this is one of the only roller coaster that physically hurts every time I go down it. So I think as a kid, I must have been able to absorb some of the vibrations a little bit more, some of the hitting of the side. But but now going down it, I mean, it's an old ride, and it was designed.
And we're not even 40 yet.
But I when I go down it now, it's just like, boom, you're bouncing into the sides and you're herky jerky. And I mean, it's still a fun ride. It just doesn't seem as smooth, I guess, as it probably seemed back in the day. And so yeah, it almost hurts. I think that's why I put it so
right. I think because you're like so low to the ground in the toboggan and you're being bounced around. And for some reason, I know it's been around forever and it's probably one of the safest roller coasters, but it just feels unsafe to me. Like I'm going to just go flying off the side of the mountain. So I love the Yeti, which is why Expedition Everest is one of my favorite roller coasters. But the Matterhorn, I think, is just not my favorite because of the mechanics, which was revolutionary for the time, but could probably use an upgrade now.
Right. And plus, I think, like, you didn't ride it as a kid. And again, we made our list together, so we were bouncing ideas off each other. And you didn't have the memories as a kid riding it. And so I think that's why it's probably lower on our list. And roller coaster technology has advanced so much over the last,
I mean, it's been 60 years, right?
And so you can't really, like, you can make small updates to the ride, but you can't make significant changes to the ride experience since the 50s. And so, like, yes, they probably have a lot better control systems. They probably are able to track exactly where the bobsleds are so that there's an even amount of space between them. But
do you think they're going to redo this?
No, I think they'll keep it forever.
You do?
Yeah, I don't.
I could see this totally being transitioned to Anna and Elsa escape the snow monster, race down the mountain.
I think they have the Frozen ride at Epcot, which is a great ride. It's probably on our list higher. And I think that is a great ride for Frozen in and of itself. I think this has way too much history with Disney. The fact that Walt Disney himself sent a telegraph at the time, or a letter that simply said, build me this, and had a picture of the Matterhorn. I think the fact that that's how it started, there's just too much legend, too much lore when it comes to the Matterhorn that I don't think they'll ever be able to get rid of it or change it.
Hmm. Well, we will see.
I mean, I think the only thing I could think of in terms of the update, since, again, the engineering technology in terms of working with steel has improved, I could see them possibly updating the track to try and make it like a smoother ride, maybe.
Yeah.
But they just recently totally upgraded the actual bobsleds themselves. Right. And so that's a pretty big
investment. And some of the track.
Right.
Yeah.
And that's a pretty big investment. And so I don't think they'll change it.
I'll give it 15 years.
I think it'll be around forever. As long as the park's around, the Matterhorn will be there. So I just wanted to talk a little bit about some of the little details that they use to make this ride so special. So you mentioned the snowfall that they put. They used 800 gallons of paint to create the snowfall, but they also used glass beads to make the snow actually glitter. And so I thought that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
And I also thought is interesting, they always have little shout outs. And I thought that was pretty cool that they had within the Matterhorn Caverns, you can see some mountaineering supplies. And there's some evidence of what's called the Wells Expedition. And that's a shout out to Frank Wells, who was the president and chief operating officer of the Walt Disney Company from 1984 until his death in 1994. And so I think that's...
He was an accomplished mountain climber.
Right, yeah.
Which is why they put him in this ride.
Right, exactly. And those little shout outs to important people within the history of Disney, I think it's just so cool that they have those little details. And you see it throughout the ride. And there was another detail that unfortunately has been taken away. There used to be even more holes in the Matterhorn when it first began.
Right, right.
And this was a little inside joke by the Imagineers. They said since it's a Swiss mountain, they thought that having holes
in
the mountain would be like Swiss cheese. And so I thought that was interesting, but they had to fill it in for safety reasons for the mountain. But again, some of the little things that the Imagineers do to make the rides extra special. And this one is definitely one of them where they did some really cool stuff.
Yeah, and it made a lot of first lists. It was the first thrill ride at Disneyland, the first tubular steel track roller coaster in the world, the first roller coaster with multiple cars on the same track, and the first roller coaster, like you said, built by Aero Development. One thing that I would love to see one day is that there's a basketball court inside the Matterhorn where cast members used to pass time between shows and climbs.
Yep, and I saw a video of it. They had a behind-the-scenes tour.
Oh, really?
Of the basketball hoops. So there was actually a cast member that I saw shooting hoops, and so it does exist in there. And I think what you said about Aero Development becoming one of the leading worldwide suppliers of roller coasters, I think, again, this is one of those kind of little talked about components of successful businesses. And I think the fact that Aero was just a machine shop and found this partner, this probably considered to be a crazy person, Walt Disney, who wanted to build this park, and they started building for him, but they did a great job. They did a great job on all the things that he asked for. And then they got this opportunity to make the Matterhorn, which then put them on the map as one of the top roller coaster companies. And that's such a small world that once you build one amazing roller coaster, guess what? You're going to get you're going to get hired for amusement parks around the world. And you hear these days, you hear of unicorns who raise $1 million because of an idea. Like, they actually built something. They actually executed on a task, and they did a great job, and they continued to build, and that built their company. And
they were able to pivot their company.
Right. Exactly. So that insights to pivot, the insights on who to partner with. I think these days you just hear about venture capitalists and these businesses that have high user bases and everything's on the computer and zeros and ones. And we've lost some of that American ingenuity of just building. And I think Aero Development gives us a really good example of what that is, to build something high quality that has a huge impact on a lot of people and then creates a business for the rest of
history. We may have to do a show just on Aero Development.
Right, right. And so hopefully we can get back to that. Hopefully there's some companies out there building some solutions to the many problems that we face as a country these days.
All righty. So that's our love for the Matterhorn. We have some trivia from last week. Steve, what is the name of the teacups at Hong Kong and Disneyland Paris?
I think...
Do you remember what Disneyland is called?
Yes, I think it's the Mad Hatter's Party.
No.
No?
It's Mad Teacups.
Oh, and the Mad Teacups.
The one in Hong Kong and Disneyland is the Mad Hatter Teacups. You always want to call it that, yeah. And the trivia for this week is, what is the Yeti's unofficial name? And what is the Yeti's girlfriend's name in Walt Disney World?
The girlfriend is in...
Expedition Everest.
Expedition Everest. Oh, I didn't realize it was a girl in Expedition Everest.
Well, per cast member blogs.
Interesting. Wow, that's very cool. I'm excited to hear about that.
Great. Well, I hope you enjoyed that and learned some things, as we did. And I'll be looking out for the Wells Expedition and trying to go left next time. And have a wonderful week. Stay healthy. Stay safe.
We hope everybody is well, and we hope you join us next week.
As you wish.
As you wish. Thanks for listening. Please check us out at countdowntomickey.com, and you can follow us on socials. We're on Instagram under Countdown to Mickey. So thanks so much, and hopefully join us next time.